Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the December 10th, 2010 edition of Commodity Week. Finally, USDA releases a yawner of a report. Dang, what will we have to talk about? Stick around and find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Tom Fritz from EFG in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Mayer, Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Have you seen the photos coming out of Australia? Harvest there looks, well, a lot like it did in the fall of 09 here in the Midwest. Will their crop, wheat that is, eventually show the stress of too much rainfall? Bill Mayer.
Well, I've seen some photos. I don't know if they're the same ones you're referring to, but we've been definitely following that for the last week or so here. Looks like it's going to be a quality issue. It's going to put a lot of that wheat into the situation where it's going to be feed wheat, which probably makes you a little bit more bullish the high-quality wheat that we've got here in the United States, and I think that's the result of the problems that we're having there right now.
Mike Zuzulo?
Boy, I tell you, Todd, it seems like to me that the fact that the British wheat futures is banging up against its 08 high, which is in U.S. currency terms almost $11 a bushel. And given the fact that China's weather is extremely cold and dry as well, along with Europe and the Middle East, I would think that unless the technicals don't hold next week, that the trade will fade USDA's number and that indeed we do have a problem brewing in Australia that has not been fully factored in at this point.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, a lot of this Australian bullishness has been put into the market. I mean, that was the reason wheat futures exploded here a week or so ago. So my best guess is it's going to be feed quality wheat, how much and how that's going to impact the total world supply, we'll have to kind of wait and see.
Here's the way the wheat futures finished up in Chicago. Remember, on the weekly trade, we give you the daily high, the low from the daytime, the overnight trade. That's the electronic and the open outcry. And then, okay, of course, the change from Friday to Friday. December wheat this week had a high of $7.61.5, a low at $7.25.75. The settlement price there on the lead at $7.35.5 in Chicago, 2.5 lower. July soft red winter wheat settled at $8.04.75 of a cent. It finished 18 cents higher. USDA did release its December numbers for the WASDE. That's the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. They had a little discussion in their comments about wheat and what was happening across the globe, and they managed to increase the ending stocks for the globe to 176.72 million metric tons. That's up from 172.51. What'd you make of the numbers?
I thought that because they increased the production in eastern Australia, I think it brings up the whole issue of kind of similar to the feed issue that Dan and Bill were talking about, how our quality issue in 09 corn came to light suddenly later down the road by USDA. In other words, both a bear and USDA raised production. Now, a bear did say that after the last several weeks of weather, these numbers can dramatically change. But USDA saying that the production was going up in eastern Australia and not referencing anything in terms of these rains, I guess I just don't buy into it, and I think it leaves the government wide open for a surprise in January.
So do you think, Dan, that a number that's bigger in the wheat ending stocks means a whole lot at this point? And by comparison, it's a 176.72 compared to what, the 09.10 at about 195 or something like that.
I'm not too sure USDA's change really did a whole lot. For the most part, that's in margin of error. And I think as we go into January and February, those numbers can be adjusted quite a bit. So I don't think there was any kind of earth-shaking change in that number.
Moving on to USDA's coarse grains for the corn in the United States, an ending stocks number now at 832 million. That's up from its previous estimate of 827 in November by 5 million bushel. That all came in terms of imports. I kind of thought that was an interesting little tidbit. The average guess, actually, from the trade was at 806. Corn futures this week had a high of 565 and a quarter, a low at 538 and a quarter. Settlement price there in the December at 560 and a quarter, a penny and a quarter higher. December of next year at $5.29 and a quarter a bushel, down 5 and a quarter. Not much of a surprise, if any, in the marketplace.
Yeah, really, just really not a lot of changes in fundamentals in general. Everybody kind of probably sitting back after this report to see what happens when they come out with the production changes next month. And I think just as a general statement, the trade's probably expecting a little bit of a drop from the November production number in corn in January. That's kind of the way the market is right now. It just looks to me like we're kind of choppy sideways. The range may even actually be narrowing up a little bit and may have an inside month here in December. That's the way it looks to me right now. Things can change.
Didn't the 5 million bushel increase in the imports really mean anything, or is it just a 5 million bushel increase?
I'm not too sure what that was. I was going to kid that's seed corn coming in to have a 95 million acre planted corn number.
That'd be a big planted corn number, dude.
I'm not too sure what that was. I'm sure it's a specialty crop of some kind, or, I really don't know what that adjustment is.
Well, what's your assessment now of the corn market for the next month or so?
Oh, I think it's...
Let's just go to the January report.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what it is. I think we do have... I'm not too sure the rally's over with for the month of December or a break. I think the market's teed up here maybe to show a little more strength, another pop here maybe before Christmas, but then maybe go into a setback as we go toward... toward the end of the month. And then, it seems to me that the bullish bus is pretty crowded. I mean, the rivets are going to start snapping one of these days. But I think that's what everybody's going to gear up for is some kind of bullishness coming out of that January crop report.
If everybody runs for the door all at the same time, everybody's all bowled up, you said.
Yeah, I don't know very many bears. There's some around if they got any teeth left from the rally all summer. But it'll be interesting. I mean, there's no doubt that if you look at the balance sheet, the trade is definitely worrying about having enough corn as we march through this marketing year and whether or not we'll get enough acres to kind of get into the so-called comfort zone for supplies.
When we get into a marketplace where we have everybody that's bullish, Mike, for the most part, and there aren't many bears, does that set it up for a really quick spike high because there just simply aren't the sellers, so it jumps and there are a few people that say, yeah, well, fine, I'll make a sale there.
Yeah, or one big order comes in and there's a vacuum above the market. I think that's exactly right. I think the other thing to be watching, too, is the implied volatility on the options. They're starting to creep up pretty high in the corn. The March options are running into the low 40s right now. And that's pretty high for the March right now. The other thing, too, that I didn't appreciate about the wheat, the wheat market is what we've talked about a lot already, but the spread on the wheat was being bull spread last week, and we almost got the March to go to an inversion to the July. It came within 4 or 6 cents, I think. This week, this past week, that unwound, and the July gained on the March. And so that's something you don't want to see also at price levels like this, because maybe the trade then goes into the idea, well, let all the bullishness is in the new crop wheat, new crop beans, new crop corn. Let's do the acreage battle, but let's keep the front end kind of flat. And that's never really that much fun, especially if you're heavy into the options.
I guess I would, going back to your question as far as the longs in the market, and it is, I'd agree with these guys heavily long right now. I think that tends to lead more towards a market where you see you got to have some kind of washout, temporary washout, get rid of some of the weak longs, then you get some new longs come back into the market to maybe move it up a little bit higher. So you have kind of a stair step type situation rather than a spike type high like you were referring to.
Dan, what do you?
I think the market goes where the orders are, and if you don't have anybody short, there's no buy stops on top of the market to drive it higher. I mean, that's what drives the market higher is people don't believe it. They keep selling it, and it sets back, and then they put their buy stops up on top, and then they get back stopped out again. So, I mean, all classic bull markets are driven by new buying plus short covering of the old short, and you know, bear markets are always met with buy orders, and then they sell them out after if it don't work on the upside. So you have that constant movement in the marketplace, and I think that's one of the problems the market has right now is there's hardly anybody in wanting to be short this thing.
Well, farmers by default have to be short the thing, right?
Yeah, but. We had a meeting yesterday, and one of the speakers, a commercial grain buyer, made the statement. I mean, right now it's pretty easy to buy cash corn. I mean, between now and the end of January, farmers are typically pretty willing to sell it. So I don't think they have to go out there necessarily. Buyers have to necessarily go out and push real hard to get that grain.
Well, that sounds opposite what I hear. I mean, it isn't the basis really narrow and the bin doors shut? Aren't they shut really tight at this point?
Right now, yeah. But as we go forward here into
He's
the
thinking
January,
once we get into January,
the January period, yeah. And it's regional too on the basis part of it, Todd. I mean, there are areas where it's very tight, but there's some areas where we still have some awfully wide bases because, yeah. Well, maybe it's narrow for the level of futures price that we're at, but historically what?
Look out at the Andersons, and yeah. I know that one is a really tight basis, but others are much, much, much more wide than that one. What are you suggesting to producers at this point? Do they wait it out for how long and for how much?
Well, I think right now you wait. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but I think as we get past the first of the year, we get past that January crop report, assuming there are no surprises there. I mean, we are still in a situation where we have to get these acres of both corn and soybeans. We got to find out how many wheat acres we're going to keep. And, I mean, when you look at the balance sheet, there's just you need maximum acres with good yields to meet demand here.
Short term, I think we went into the report with weather, the outside markets, and the technicals on the side of the bull. If we keep those next week, I think, like Dan, we can go higher. I question, in my mind's eye, I think about it, Todd, this way. How can we be up at the highest level since September of 08 in the S&P 500 and be rallying to new highs in the NASDAQ when the economic fundamentals maybe don't justify that? And then you sit over with the grains who have extremely tight supplies that are getting actually tighter as the winter goes on in the northern hemisphere because of the dry and the cold weather. I think, you know, if the equities can go higher, I think the commodities should be able to as well. So in the shorter term, I think we go higher with as long as the technicals hold in there.
Dan, you jokingly mentioned acreage battle and 95 million acres of corn. Most say at least 5 million more than last year, so that'd be, what, 94, I suppose. We're in that range.
Well, I think that's what the trade, the end users would like to have to kind of get into a comfortable supply, something around 92 or 93. But I think when you look at current soybean prices and the tight balance sheet that we have in soybeans, it's going to be difficult, I think, to get that large a corn number. I think the needle has been moved somewhat in that direction, but I don't think We're anywhere near 92 or 93 million acre planted at this point.
And speaking of soybeans, the January contract, a $13.63 top, a low at $12.66.5 on the week. Settlement price there at $12.73, finished 27.25 cents lower. November beans at $11.82.75, down 14.75. Did the break surprise you at all?
I guess one of the things that surprised me just today was, you know, we lost 20 million bushel carryout there in the report, down to 165, and really broke the market 8 cents. But I know it was in there. Again, kind of like corn, we're kind of in a sideways, choppy pattern, I think, right now. Still waiting for what's going on in South America. There's some differing opinions as far as weather and production down there. And that's probably, at this point, what's kind of driving the market from the fundamental side, at least.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our guest in studio, Dan Zwicker, Bill Mayer, and Mike Zuzulo. Back in just 2 minutes, and we'll talk with Tom Fritz.
Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The first full week of December was more like the first full week of January here in Illinois. The week began with snow in the northeastern half of the state, with the heaviest snow up to 9 inches in east central Illinois. The snow was followed by a surge of Arctic air that remained over the state most of the week. Temperatures this week were much below normal, as you might have guessed, ranging from 9 to 10 degrees below normal in southwestern and southern Illinois to as much as 13 degrees below normal over the snow-covered areas of the state. Low temperatures dropped below zero in locations in the northern half of Illinois on both Wednesday and Thursday mornings, where snow cover, clear skies, and light winds resulted in maximum radiational cooling. Precipitation was largely limited to the snow last weekend, although flurries occurred early in the week. A weak Clipper system brought some light snow and some mixed precipitation to northern Illinois late Thursday and Thursday night. The second full week of December will start out very cold as Arctic air plunges south behind this weekend's storm. A warming trend should set up the last half of the week as another storm system begins to organize in the central plains. That storm will likely affect Illinois next weekend, with some rain possible on Friday and some snow later in the weekend as cold air wraps around the low pressure system passing to our south. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the December 10th, 2010 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, Dan Zwicker from ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Bill Mayer with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line today, Tom Fritz. He's with EFG in Chicago. Tom, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
What do you think of an acreage battle for the 2010 season?
I'm all for it.
The more the better, huh?
Oh, you bet.
Well, how's it going to line out?
I think it's going to be difficult to get corn acres above 90 million with bean prices where they are. And with the tight carryout we have this year, puts that much more importance on having sufficient acres for next year.
Well, tell me a bit more about bean prices at this $13 level. What really does it mean for corn and where it needs to go?
Right now, I think you need to see new crop corn closer to $6.
You said you don't think that corn acres will go above 90. Is that what?
Right now, you know, given everybody that I talk to, It's going to be difficult to get corn acres above 90 million unless we tear up a lot of Midwestern wheat.
So it looks to me like that means that we're just trying to maintain carryout is probably the kind of the best we can hope for. Is that?
That's the way I'm looking at it.
Tom, last time we talked was probably a week and a half or so ago, and you were thinking flat line into the end of the year. Wondering if you're still thinking that or possibly a break, and what would change your mind of what your opinion is right now?
Mike, short term, I'm looking for a bit of a sell-off next week. But I think, you know, when the month is over, you're going to be able to go back and look and say, you know, we just kind of spun our wheels. We really didn't go anywhere. You know, year-end considerations here. You know, you're going to have a lot of book squaring. Everybody and their neighbor knows that the index funds are going to have to do some rebalancing, and that's going to involve selling some grain just because of what their performances were this year.
Tom, as you look ahead toward that January crop report, what do you think the market needs to rattle it to the upside, I guess?
I think we're going to need to see a another minor cut in the yield. I think the government didn't change some of our demand numbers today because of the ethanol subsidy battle that's going on right now. At our current rate of grind for ethanol, USDA is what, 300, 400 million bushels short right now?
But they're 350 above the mandate.
I agree with that, but at the current rate we're grinding would suggest better usage for ethanol.
What about the – because we have 2 years of RINs out there that they can move around, whether they're used or not, are you sure that the ethanol thing needs to be figured back into a 5 million bushel usage?
I think they have to account for some of it just because of what our current grind is.
So the discretionary blending is probably where that's coming from. Is that right, Tom?
That is correct.
Could you address China a little bit? I mean, that's the big number here or the big thing that's in the market, it seems like. Do they just continue to buy soybeans especially regardless of price or, you know, where do you see that going as you look out further?
Well, number one, China never wants to run short. Number two, their animal expansion will continue. What's the adage? You know, we have to keep our people fed. Once you feed them, you can't take it away from them. Otherwise, you're going to have anarchy on your hands. So I believe the Chinese market will continue to expand. But in the near term, I think their rate of bean buying can slow down. Looking at some cash prices the other day, looking at Brazil springtime prices versus our springtime prices, Brazil is cheaper now. And, right now I don't think you could ignore the fact that, you know, sure, it's still early in the season, but Brazil's in pretty good shape right now.
Tom, how about the new legislation? You know, that seemed to be talked about a lot maybe a month, 2 months ago about the Dodd-Frank bill, and we're right on the eve of that coming across. What are you hearing and picking up with the speculators and the investors, you know, as a result of some of this regulation coming in?
I think the regulators will put some further limitations on the energy markets, quite possibly the precious metal markets. But from everything I read, they will not address new limits in the grain sector until almost mid-2011.
Tom, how are you sizing up the U.S. Winter wheat crop?
It didn't go. It's the hard red winter areas, the southern plains, far less than desirable. We had some late rains before the freeze set in the Midwest. I think that helped out a lot. But how many more acres of winter wheat are we going to see? Right now, trade consensus is 3 million. But I think there's going to be it's going to be an underlying supporting issue going forward through the winter months until the southern plains break dormancy.
Tom, I want to bring you back to the ethanol grind. So 4.7 billion bushels for USDA, That's 350 million above the mandate. Mm-hmm. There are about 400 million bushels of RINs floating around. They have to be used within 2 years of their 2 years of the gallon of gasoline being ground from those. That's 750 million bushels. That's a lot of RINs, and they've got to be worth some money somewhere. Don't they have to come back into the marketplace?
Well, I think they eventually will, not only in our domestic market, but the export market for U.S. ethanol is slowly but surely, building. You look at Brazil with their sugar-based ethanol. They had some problems with their sugar crop this year. Their prices have gotten a little high, and I think that's opened the door for some U.S. corn-based ethanol.
The processor, the ethanol grind is very profitable. And, I mean, basically the ethanol market or the corn processor market is the market. It is outbidding everything, whether, if you're a farmer near an ethanol plant, you're getting the best bids you can get. The river can't keep up with them. The shuttle business is way out of the market because there's slowdown
right,
in demand.
Right. So I guess I'm trying to get at, Dan, and maybe Tom and Dan and everybody can think about this a little bit, is that there are 350 million bushels of RINs being created in the current year, in the current marketing year, right? There are 400 million there. I know that, I mean, those 350 wouldn't be being created at this point if it wasn't profitable to go ahead and grind ethanol. But at some point, because they have an expiration date 2 years after that bushel is ground, it seems to me that they would have to come back into the marketplace.
Nothing has to do anything. Well, as long as the grind is profitable, they're going to continue to produce ethanol. But now, as soon as it becomes unprofitable, then they use the RINs.
That depends on the price of crude oil compared to the price of ethanol directly, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'm hearing or picking up is that some of the ethanol that is being aggressively purchased right now is indeed being purchased just because of this tax credit issue, and they're locking in essentially the zero tax or the 56 or 54 cent blender's credit before 2011 in case the blender's credit does go away. So they are essentially loading the boat with extra ethanol right now in some locations.
Tom, I took some of your time, so I'll give you the free floor. What is it that you'd like to make sure that producers know from you?
Just make sure you have a marketing plan. You got to have a plan. You know, I still see so many producers out there that just, tend to wing it. And I think going forward, not only next year, but in the coming years, the importance of having a marketing plan is just so essential to their success.
Thank you so much, Tom. Tom Fritz is with EFG in Chicago, our panelist in studio. A final word from Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Couldn't agree more with Tom's last statement there. Now is the time to know what your profit levels are and how much of those levels you want to try to lock in at this point and how many you want to leave open to the market.
Mike Zuzlo with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Wheat and technicals lead us into the end of the year in terms of price direction. Merry Christmas to all of you.
And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Yeah, I'd like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and happy holidays with their family for the next 2 weeks, and we'll talk to you next week or next year.
Absolutely, and that is this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.